You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Wednesday, June 23rd. It's also a great pleasure to be joined by three friends who've been with us before to talk about the Southern Vermont Economy Project, Southern Vermont Economic Conference, that was held last month virtually this time. It was the fourth time the conference has been held. Three times earlier, it was in locations between Bennington and Brattleboro. Last year, of course, in 2020, the conference had to be canceled as the COVID-19 pandemic was surging forward. This year, fortunately, we were able to have a remote conference that was quite fascinating, had many interesting speakers and conferences. So here to tell us a little bit about what happened and what some of their takeaways were and maybe kind of where we go from here, we're really pleased to have with us today Jennifer Stromson, who is the Director of Programs for the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation. Sarah Lang is the Southern Vermont Economy Project Manager for the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation. And also pleased to welcome back Jonathan Cooper, who is the Community and Economic Development Specialist with the Bennington County Regional Commission. Folks, thanks very much for making the time to talk with us today and share your views and insights about the conference and kind of what may come next. And I guess I just thought I'd start by throwing out the question to each of you and going around the Zoom room here. What were your biggest takeaways from the conference? And Jen, let me start with you, if I may. What stood out to you from the three-day event?
Yeah, thank you so much for convening this conversation and for letting us sort of dive into what we feel like what we learned. I went into this really excited to hear from Tony Pippa from the Brookings Institution. And I felt very heartened by the perspective that he gave. He said some things that really resonated for us, which is that rural policy is really outdated and is based in another time. It doesn't reflect the diversity and divergent experience or the entrepreneurialism of rural areas, the economic diversity of activities. And so for someone like him, who they are informing policy from the Brookings Institution, people like that, it felt kind of like we were seen and like our challenges were seen. And some of the suggestions that he was making really, get at things that we need more of. You know, we need more capacity building. One of the reasons why we can't access current programs is there's no one to write the grant and run the grant in a lot of really small places that don't have county government and big organizations. So that's just one example. Some of the other things that I just really loved during the summit. I mean, I was going back to my notes this morning and I was like, oh, I could really go on and on, but so I'm trying to pick some highlights. I really loved Majora Carter's message. And one of the things that I enjoyed so much was kind of how it resonated with people, this idea that she came from a place where she was raised to define success as leaving. And that's kind of a certain attitude towards our places. And that's a lot of what happens in Vermont. You know, we love Vermont, but we kind of raise our kids to leave. And if we're going to really change how things are going here, you know, we can challenge that and we can come at that in a different way. But it's going to take not only remote jobs and broadband and all those things, it also takes a change in our attitudes. And I think that really was so poignant for us because, you know, we have a program that works in the high schools and that's part of what we're trying to do. We're trying to help create opportunity here, but also help kids see opportunity that's here for them. So I guess those are two really big highlights that are just so relevant to the daily work that we do.
All right. Well, Jonathan, over to you. What were the things that stood out to you as you think back over the conference?
The first and foremost was that people wanted to go to the summit this year. And that really stood out as just an amazing, you know, like as we've gotten through our Zoom fatigue and, you know, it was still something that was top of mind for people and was able to make, they were able to make time and they're already busy remote work schedules to join, participate, and to truly participate through sort of the facilitated Q&A that would go on through the sessions. And I really wanted to say thank you to Sarah and the BDCC team for taking on that gargantuan logistics task and for once again coming up with a roster of presenters that was just, you know, top shelf. I think that I wanted to briefly address something that I think Jen referred to in Tony Pippa's talk, where, you know, overall he's sort of talking about the creation of a sort of world development sort of corporation, like a sort of another sort of federally backed entity. And there was something in there that caused me a little bit of alarm, in that, you know, it is that there is a bit of a race to the top. And one of the challenges with the race to the top is that, you know, thinking back to Sputnik gets in the air and Bob Hope says, well, their Germans are better than our Germans. And the thought is, we have this, you know, we've been in our SEDS explicitly talking about building fluency and, you know, capacity around economic development in our towns. It's a major component of the Southern Vermont Economy Project, really trying to develop that. And because the hope is that we don't end up leaving good projects behind because there's not the level of fluency that would be needed to speak that federalese in that process. And it was heartening to see the call for like eliminating gatekeepers, but that will require people in the federal chain being able to have many different kinds of conversations with many different kinds of communities to assess what's a great project that maybe has a champion who is championing projects in a different way than perhaps the way that we've been championing them in the past. So that struck me as an area to explore, something that I'd like to know more about and something that I think could have real ramifications. Now, I don't believe that Vermont necessarily has gatekeepers because this is a very small state. So I can understand the need for that in those states with 9, 10, 14, 20 million people, but I kind of like the setup that we have here. Having said that, I also wanted to mention Susana Davis's presentation, where the notion of interest coming from that previous comment I made, really providing some of the data around the value of equity from an economic development perspective, in addition to a community development perspective or an ethical perspective. That struck me as being, you know, one, we got to see somebody, like, you could really feel good about the work that she's doing and the, like, how important that work is for Vermont to be taking on at a state government level, how appropriate it is at a state of our size to be taking that on. And also, you know, how we can really begin to apply that lens, you know, to ourselves with this really valuable information that she was able to provide, including the caveat that we want to be data driven, but not data hostages. And that struck me as something that when I saw that slide, that presentation portion, I thought, that's a really good point for us to make. And so a lot of different, you know, sort of perspectives to hold in balance to find what's best aligned and what will give us the best possible momentum to see some of these community projects and regional projects through to completion. And so those were some things that stood out to me, Andrew. Thank you.
And Sarah, over to you now. I was thinking, in addition to your reactions and takeaways, you were also involved in helping set up the conference and the remote setup that was used. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that as well as your reactions to some of the things the speakers and various meetups had to offer.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'd like to just provide some sort of summit by the numbers to give people watching kind of a feel for who is there, you know, who is represented, what were the numbers like. So the summit took place over 3 days, which normally it's a one full day in person, but we spread it out over 3 days. We had 9 sessions, and included in that were 3 keynote speakers. We worked with probably over 80 panelists, speakers, independent contractors, facilitators, and sponsors to really make the summit happen and come to fruition. We had 160 attendees, and of those attendees, there were 63 towns represented and 113 organizations, business, municipalities represented. So as far as numbers go, I was really happy with the outcome and who decided to show up. And, you know, there are obviously aspects that you can't produce in a virtual forum that you have in person, that buzz that you get with a full ballroom, you know, after a keynote speaker. So I definitely did miss that. However, I do think using Zoom as a virtual platform provided alternative benefits to the summit. And some of those are that, so for instance, when in person, when we have a breakout session, you know, you basically have to choose between one of four. You can't go to all four, can't be in four places at once. And so by holding them separately, you know, basically in order, people could attend any and all sessions. And so typically in person for the breakout sessions, we'd probably have, I'd say 20 to 40 people at each breakout session. But through the virtual format, we had about 80 people in each session. So just like almost double the amount of attendees got to attend the sessions that we put on. So more eyeballs and ears were taking in the information. And then the other benefit I believe virtual provided was the quality of speakers. And not that like our speakers in in-person summits were of low quality. We were just able to provide more speakers at a higher quality because honestly, the cost of having someone zoom in, like Majora Carter, who is nationally known, the cost of having her speak virtually is a lot less than in person. And so honestly, we would not be able to afford to have her speak in person. And so I just really appreciated being able to bring those high quality speakers to our region virtually, of course. And as far as the takeaways, like I really felt like this year's summit, we had the freedom to sort of explore indirect topics around the economy, specifically around like diversity and newcomers. And I think honestly, attendees had different reactions to that. And for me, I felt proud that we were able to, you know, provide those sessions and maybe open some eyes of people that, you know, even though we're not talking specifically about dollars or specifically about employers, you know, I think these indirect things that affect our economy are really important to start trying to wrap our heads around. And like I said, people had different reactions, but generally I think people were really receptive and wanted more than we even provided on those topics.
What is your sense of the outlook for the economy of Southern Vermont as we enter the summer season, which is usually a fairly busy one for a lot of our hospitality businesses, restaurants, and the like? I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about how it's been hard for some of those businesses to find enough workers or skilled workers, and just, you know, coming out of a year where a lot of them struggled and probably took on a lot of debt just to kind of stay afloat. Is it your sense that this summer, when maybe people also kind of want to, you know, get out and do some traveling and make up for lost time, as it were, will that be, is the outlook looking positive, or is it still too early to tell and kind of questionable?
I mean, it always depends on what part of the economy you're talking about, you know? And so like one of the reasons why we started really following the Brookings Institution more closely than ever at the beginning of the pandemic was because they provided some great research that broke out the economy in various ways, but put them into risk categories based both on the nature of their business. So like, is it retail? Do they have to have personal interactions to do business? But also kind of size, the typical size and capitalization levels. So, and so that really helped us get a different, it's very easy to react to what you see out there and then to try to explain it, you know, with what you see. It's very hard to look at the economy more deeply. So to answer your question, in the first, you know, the first thing people think of when they think of the economy, they're like, my downtown, my favorite stores, my favorite restaurants. And those are all on people's minds, and hospitality and tourism, which is, you know, something people see and understand. And, you know, my answer to you briefly on those is just, I do think that there's pent up demand and excitement about being able to do things. And Vermont has worked really hard and sacrificed a lot to get to this safe place. And I think it's paying off. And that's awesome. I also think that there are, you know, scars and bruises on a lot of our businesses from what they just went through. And then you add to that a labor shortage. And, you know, if I was trying to think of a clever way to, you know, show you the bar chart on our labor supply, but the short version of it is that in, you know, we have the same level labor force. We have less of a labor force than we did 30 years ago. So there are fewer working people in the economy, and that includes unemployed people. And so, and that's just a function of demographics, right? It's just a function of retirements and, you know, outflow of young people and stuff like that. So as folks start to reopen, people are seeing symptoms of this problem, but they're often ascribing a certain explanation to it, right? People don't want to work, or they're staying on unemployment. There are many different explanations, but the one that transcends all of this is just we have fewer people to work. And you may not know this except through your experience of waiting for an hour longer than you had hoped to in a restaurant, right? Or driving down Putney Road and just seeing more help wanted signs than ever in front of manufacturers and stores and this and that. But underneath that is this just kind of pretty simple fact, is that the bodies of people who are able and willing to work and in the age range where people, you know, generally feel capable of working full time, fewer of them. And that's not going to go away. So, you know, we are dealing with it in many different ways, but that cuts across every sector. And there are lots of different stories to tell, and that includes entry-level people, that includes, you know, accountants, but that is here to stay for a while till we take it seriously.
You know, on that topic, I think it's worth mentioning that Non-Anthony Union High School graduating class in the mid-80s, early 80s, was about 420 students. And this past year, it was 180. And, you know, Bennington hasn't really gotten any larger. Bennington County's population hasn't really grown, but it hasn't shrunk by that much. We're just, our pyramid looks a lot different than it, you know, our demographic pyramid looks a lot different now than it did in the era that we call sort of the heyday. And that's a big, big part of it for a lot of our industries. And I think that sometimes those numbers can help see that, you know, as Jen was saying, we can ascribe reasons that we're sort of thinking about in the present, but numbers like that can sometimes really make it clear what exactly we're dealing with.
Right. Well, Sarah, what's your thinking on some of the challenges that are facing the Southern Vermont economy as we head into the summer?
Well, I think, you know, and this has been talked about nationally at a national level, but housing has always been an issue. And I believe the pandemic really exacerbated it and really brought housing as an issue to the forefront. Whether or not it will be solved or attempt to be solved is yet to be seen, but I think it created more urgency around housing. And so I hope that's the push that we need to really start finding creative solutions to our housing problem that a lot of rural areas are running into. And then I guess the second thing I would say would be, I think Southern Vermont sees themselves as a very welcoming region. And I think on the surface we are, but I really appreciated being able to bring the voices forward of the newcomers so people can actually hear from them about their experiences and maybe reevaluate what it means to be welcoming and how they themselves or their community can really work on being like actually being welcoming. And that looks different for different people in different communities. But, you know, I think we hear a lot of talk on social media about newcomers, whether they're asylum seekers or moving here from New York City because of the pandemic. And oftentimes you aren't hearing the voices of those actual people that they're talking about. And so I think being able to bring sort of the other side of the equation to the table and really hear what it's been like for people being new to the area, to Southern Vermont, hopefully, you know, shed some light for people on like, oh, okay, I feel like I'm welcoming. I feel like our community is welcoming, but I'm hearing from these people, there's a lot of work to do. And so I think hopefully a reevaluation of what it means to be welcoming to all different types of people in our region is forthcoming. It's needed, you know, at the very basic, like we just need more people. And in order to get to that goal of more people, we need to be more welcoming to different types of people.
Which brings to mind one other thought I've been mulling a little bit is it'll be interesting to see as we move into this new phase of the pandemic era, whether or not all the folks who came up to Vermont last year and drove the real estate market into a frenzy, will they stay around?
I think, Andrew, on that point, like there's so many factors at play, and that so one of the sessions we did were COVID newcomers here to stay. And we heard from people who moved here during the pandemic. And I think a lot of those deciding factors are not only personal, like, okay, do I feel welcomed here? Do I feel like I can make a community here? But it's also external factors. Like, you know, we had a filmmaker was one of the panelists, and he's like, there's not a lot of work here for me. You know, and so that's going to affect his decision, whether he loves it here or not. He still has to make money. And that session was great because at the end they talked a lot about like, here are the things that could help change my or help sort of solidify my decision to stay. I think people really need to take that to heart.
And on that note, I noticed that over in Brattleboro, you're having a meeting of the Ethiopian Community Development Center and National Refugee Resettlement Group hopes to launch a pilot program in Brattleboro. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Or Jen, can you tell us what's up with that?
Yeah, I'll just give sort of a quick overview. For several years, we have been focused on the need to bring more people, to keep people here, to keep them thriving here, and also bring more people here. Because if you looked at the numbers even 10 years ago, it was clear that the folks who were here weren't going to have enough kids to offset the decline that we were going to experience. So this has been known and written. We've tried a variety of things and worked with a number of different partnerships. And over the last couple of years, we started working towards creating a team for this Boston Fed Working Communities Challenge. And so we did that, we participated in that, and that kind of dragged on during COVID. The team, that overarching initiative is really to welcome all kinds of immigration and migration. It's to really create the conditions to be supportive of people kind of landing here and succeeding here, you know, with a focus on folks who, you know, can come and especially like, you know, fill schools, fill jobs, right? Like be like active parts of our committees and communities. So we were not funded for that. The team was not funded for that. We made it to the final round, but then during the legislative session, funding was put into the budget for all four of the finalist teams across the states. So they're all doing different things, but ours was focused on immigration. And so we will be receiving some funding to put capacity into that. That initiative, there's a lot more complexity to that, but part of that work had been us trying to find a way to partner in order to achieve the state's refugee resettlement goals. So the governor announced, the president announced certain goals, and the governor announced that as part of Vermont's participation in that, that he would like to see 300 refugees, I think a year, you know, settled in Vermont. And so we know that that's beyond the scope of what can happen like just in Burlington. And it fits exactly with what we've been trying to do. So we did find, there are 9 different organizations nationally that do this kind of work. The ECDC doesn't just resettle Ethiopians. They just grew out of a community-based organization that originally worked with the Ethiopians. And so that's our partner. That's our partner that does this work nationally. They have, you know, sort of a dozen or more communities in which they already settle refugees, and they're looking to establish 2 new kind of hubs, one of them, you know, being Brattleboro and one being Wausau, Wisconsin. So 2 kind of rural hubs, and that's the path we're on. So we just had a recent meeting relating to that, sort of convening, you know, stakeholders in a certain definition based on what they have to kind of boxes they have to check off for this, their process, their vetting process. This is the beginning of a community conversation, kind of not the end of it. So this is a long journey, and we're excited about it. you know, I'm kind of overwhelmed by just the personal response, you know, from people. You know, we had someone in here yesterday who's a really important, founded an important business in this area, an important philanthropist, and who this has been a passionate issue for him. And so it was just really exciting, you know, to talk with people who are like that, for whom this is personal. This is, you know, like this resonates with something personally, in terms of, you know, making sure that the opportunity of America is available to people who have, you know, frankly been suffered and had the door shut on them for the last 4 years. So.
And one of the things to add to that, if I may, is that, you know, looking at the map of where these services are currently provided, I think the nearest area is Rutland. And so for potential populations, Southern Vermont really isn't on the map. And obviously this sort of activity is intensely local. I think it begins with, you know, you need that office, that sort of field office that Jen is referring to, that Brattleboro presence. And I'm really glad that Jen mentioned that, you know, the ECDC serves a number of, serves a very broad spectrum of the population, not simply people from Ethiopia, which is the case with nearly all of these centers. The Association of Africans Living in Vermont, up in Burlington, these, you know, they are not simply, they're now the AALV because they provide services to a wide number of individuals. So it's really kind of exciting to see an initiative that has the potential to sort of fill a blank slate on the map that where these services haven't been available. And that sort of brings some additional value to our region. And as we know, like being able to provide services in Southern Vermont, in this small area where we can provide services that are just simply not expected in towns or regions of this size, it speaks a lot to the sort of priorities that we have for what Southern Vermont is as a place to live, to thrive, and to remain for years to come.
We have about a minute or so left, and Sarah, I just wondered if you could tell the viewers if they wanted to go back and revisit parts of the summit conference we've been discussing, where do they go and how would they access some of the materials?
Yeah, so again, one of the benefits that I didn't mention earlier of virtual is we can record everything. So if you happen to have missed it, you know, I didn't expect people to take 3 days out of their work schedule to attend. So I'm sure people missed some of the sessions, but we have all the recordings up on the website, and that's sovermontzone.com/recordings-and-materials. If you just go to sovermontzone.com/summit, you can also find a link straight on that page. And we're also working to sort of repurpose a lot of the content. One of the sort of offshoots we're working on now is having guest blog posts. So I asked either facilitators of the session or people who attended a session to provide their takeaways and sort of the tidbits that they learned or pulled out of each session that they attended. So we're trying to really repurpose the content in many different ways because there's a lot there. We could talk about it in many different ways, and we should. And so, you know, I think watching it once through is great, but also keeping an eye out for those perspectives on the topics and sessions is important.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today. I just want to thank you all again for making the time for this conversation. Jen Stromston, Sarah Lang, Jonathan Cooper, really great to have you all back on the program. And, well, we'll see you again real soon, I'm sure, I hope, and hopefully in 2022 in person someplace. I would imagine we can look forward to that, one of our ski areas.
Yes.
All right, and thanks to all of you for watching. I hope you found the program interesting, and we'll see you again the next time. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.